She wanted to say yes, but... She grabbed the memory log and projected Mr. Forkel the way she remembered him. Wrinkled, overweight. There had to be a mistake. Alden gasped as he looked over her shoulder. He is an elf. But he's old. That's exactly what someone looks like when they've eaten ruckleberries. See the way the skin looks stretched? The body swells and wrinkles as the berries digest. He did smell like feet, Sophie remembered. That could have been from the berries. Alden swept his hair back and stared into space. That explains why the kidnapper backed down. He could tell your neighbor was more powerful than him. I'm sure the Black Swan had their most skilled operative guarding you. He shook his head. I should have guessed they wouldn't leave you alone. They'd want someone nearby, in case anything went wrong. He was right. Mr. Forkel had always looked out for her. He'd called 911 when she hit her head. And he was always asking about her headaches. He must have known she was a telepath. But why could I hear his thoughts? Shouldn't his mind have been silent? Another part of his disguise. A highly skilled telepath can broadcast thoughts the way humans do. He gave you what you needed to hear to not suspect him. I bet that's how they planted some of the memories in your brain. He certainly had enough access to you to broadcast subliminal messages when he needed to. Mr. Forkel? A telepath? She sucked in a breath. He was there when I fell and hit my head. The accident that started my telepathy when I was 5. Do you think he did something to me?
It's possible. I'm not sure why they'd want to trigger an ability in you at that age. But he might have decided to take advantage of you being unconscious. Telepathy can be easier to activate that way. Not that I've ever tried it.
In fact, I wonder. What? She asked, when he didn't finish.
I wonder if he's the reason you've developed more abilities. He might have triggered some after he rescued you. They were exactly the skills you needed to survive.
She didn't remember that much of what happened, but she did remember feeling 5 years old again. Was that because he'd done the same thing he'd done back then? She shook her head. It was too much. Her whole life she'd been controlled and manipulated. And they were still doing it.
Why? She asked, wishing she had something to throw.
Why put me with humans? Why all the secrets? What was the point?
I don't know, Alden whispered as he rose to pace. I'd always assumed it was to hide you from us. But maybe there was more to it than that. Tell me this. Why did you risk everything to bottle the Everblaze?
She was surprised he had to ask. People were dying.
Humans were dying, he corrected. And no one cared enough to stop it. Except you. I think you can hardly deny your upbringing played a big role in that decision. Maybe that's what the Black Swan wanted all along. If you're right, and they're working against these other rebels, who seem to want to destroy the human race, then perhaps they thought it would be wise to have someone who cared about humans on their side.
I'm not on their side.
That doesn't mean they don't want you to be.
He paused to stare out the window.
The only ones who'll know for sure are the Black Swan. It's time we find them and ask them.
He made it sound so simple, like he could just look up their address in the phone book. They've been hiding from you for years. What makes you think you can find them now?
He held up the memory log. We'll run these images through the registry database. Your neighbor might be hard to match, but we'll check every telepath until we find him and force him to lead us to the Black Swan. In the meantime, We'll use the other picture to find the identity of the kidnapper. Once we catch him, we'll be able to probe his mind to find the others. She curled her knees into her chest, shaking her head. I told him I recognized him. I'm sure he's in hiding now. It's not that easy to hide from us. No offense, but it doesn't seem like it's that hard. The Black Swan hid me for 12 years, and you only found me when they led you to me. The kidnappers hid us somewhere in Paris, and you had no idea. They have secret leaping crystals hidden among humans that no one knows about, except the other rebels. I think it's easier to hide here than in human cities. At least they have security cameras and detectives and police. Alden sighed.
I see why you might feel that way. But you have to understand, Sophie. Humans have those measures in place because conspiracies and arson and kidnapping are common. Those are unheard of here. Or they used to be.
He shook his head.
For thousands of years, the Council reigned supreme. They were the wisest, most talented members of our society, working together for the greater good. No one questioned their authority. But the past few decades have changed everything.
Why?
Humans. They've developed weapons powerful enough to destroy the planet. So about 60 years ago, a measure was brought before the Council to create a new sanctuary, specifically for humans, to relocate them for the good of the Earth and their own safety. It had a lot of support. Some very influential people have grown tired of hiding in the shadows while humans run amok throughout the globe. But the Council rejected it, refusing to imprison an intelligent species. For the record, I agree with their decision.
Sophie nodded. Humans would be devastated if their lives were uprooted that way.
The supporters of the initiative were angry with the Council. Some called for members to resign, especially Bronte, since he was the most outspoken against the idea. And there were threats to go ahead with the plan anyway. The Council didn't take the threat seriously, but they forbade human contact of any kind and recruited telepaths like myself to keep our minds open for suspicious activity. All talk of rebellion vanished, and the Council was satisfied. Crisis solved.
He sighed.
I'd always suspected the rebels moved underground, though I never would have guessed there was more than one group. I'm afraid I've been almost as blind as the Council.
His shoulders sagged as he stared at the ground.
Even when I found your DNA, none of the counselors would believe you really existed, or that if you did, that it had anything to do with rebellion. That's why things have been handled so poorly. But they can't ignore it anymore. An elf tried to burn the Forbidden Cities to the ground with Everblaze. A team of alchemists had to spend days making frisson to put out fires all over the globe. Two children were kidnapped by an unregistered pyrokinetic and held prisoner while we held funerals for them.
His voice cracked, and he paused for a second, clearing his throat.
The Council has been forced to admit the rebellion exists, and you can rest assured that this threat will be resolved. We have tremendous power at our disposal. We just haven't been using it.
Sophie reached for Ella, hugging her to her chest to hide her shaking. She wanted to believe him, but it was hard. The rebels were smart and very well organized. If they wanted to get to her, she had no doubt that they could. But she had a bodyguard now. He would keep her safe,
though she wasn't in love with the idea of a giant gray goblin following her around all the time.
I can tell you're still worrying, Sophie, and I don't blame you. But trust me on this. The rebellion will be stamped out very quickly now that the Council is willing to acknowledge it. Anyone involved will be brought to justice.
I hope so, she whispered,
trying not to think about the ghostly-voiced elf who was out there somewhere, plotting revenge.
I'll see if I can trigger any memories that might help.
No,
Alden sat beside her.
I don't want you involved.
You've been a big help, and you have incredible powers at your disposal. But you're 12 years old.
13, she corrected, realizing her birthday had passed a few months ago. Elves didn't pay attention to birthdays, given their indefinite lifespans, so she'd forgotten.
Fine. 13.
That's still too young to be wrapped up in a conspiracy.
I want you to make me a new promise.
He waited until she met his eyes.
I want you to promise you will just be a normal, happy, 13-year-old girl. Go to school, make friends, get crushes on boys, have fun. No more worrying about secret messages or plots or rebellions. Leave that to boring grown-ups like me.
But I'm not a normal 13-year-old girl. I have abilities no one understands, and secrets stored in my brain that people are willing to kill me for.
That may be true, but being special doesn't mean you can't have a normal life. You only get 7 years to be a teenager. Enjoy them. Promise me you'll try.
A normal life. It sounded too good to be true. It was too good to be true. After everything she'd been through, she'd accepted that she would never fully belong. It was time to stop pretending that she could.
I'll try, she agreed. Only if you promise me that if something big happens and you need me, you'll come to me, even if I'm only 13. He held her gaze, like he was waiting for her to blink. She didn't.
You drive a hard bargain, he relented. But deal.
Okay, then. I promise.
The Council will be happy to hear that. It will help at your tribunal.
Tribunal?
His eyes dropped to the floor.
Bronte still insisting a tribunal be held for the laws you broke to collect the Everblaze. Plus, the Council has to decide your future at Foxfire.
She tugged out an eyelash. She'd forgotten how uncertain her future still was.
When will it be?
Not right away. They've agreed to wait until you're strong enough.
I'm strong enough.
3 days ago, you had a banshee sleeping at your side. And we were terrified we'd have to hold a real funeral for you.
Please don't make me wait. I can't stand not knowing.
Alden studied her face for a long time before responding.
If that's what you really want, I'll arrange everything for tomorrow.
She nodded. It is. 49.
Sophie sat next to Alden on a pedestal facing the 12 counselors in Tribunal Hall, and this time, it was a packed house. Friends, mentors, strangers, even enemies. Stina sneered at her as Bronte rose to read the charges. Between the laws and the bylaws, and the sub-bylaws, she'd committed 5 major transgressions and 11 minor transgressions. A new record. At least half of them carried the possibility of exile. And yet, Sophie wasn't afraid. She'd been drugged and interrogated, watched her best friend tortured for trying to escape, and had to fight her way back from fading away. No matter what the Council decided, it could never be worse than what she'd already survived. So her legs didn't shake
as she walked forward to speak her defense. And she didn't tremble under Bronte's glare. Her curtsy was as ungraceful as ever. She heard Stina snicker as she lost her balance at the end. But she held her head high as she faced the council in all their regal glory.
"Miss Foster,"
Emery said, his voice warm.
"On behalf of the entire council, I'd like to express our relief that you made it home safely. We'd also like to assure you that we will find whoever was responsible for your kidnapping and make them see justice for their actions."
"Thank you," she said, proud of the strength in her voice.
"That being said, you stand before us today, accused of very serious charges. What have you to say in your defense?"
She'd spent all night drafting the perfect apology for her actions, but she'd thrown it away before leaving Everglen. She wasn't sorry for what she'd done, and she wouldn't pretend otherwise. Orlai would know she was lying anyway. Sophie cleared her throat and addressed the entire council, even Bronte. "I never wanted to break the law, and I don't plan on doing it again. But people were losing their houses. People were dying. I know they were humans, but I couldn't sit back and let it happen. I'm sorry if that's a crime. I won't argue if you punish me for my choice, but I firmly believe it was the right decision. I'd rather be punished for making the right decision than live with the guilt of making the wrong one for the rest of my life." Murmurs and whispers filled the room until Emery cleared his throat. Silence fell as he closed his eyes and placed his hands over his temples. Most of the counselors ignored her as they debated, but Tarek glanced her way, shooting the tiniest wink when their eyes met. She hoped it was a good sign, but she couldn't be sure. Emery held out his hands to silence the arguments raging in his head. His eyes locked with Sophie's, his face unreadable.
"Thank you for your honesty, Miss Foster. While some of us," he glanced at Bronte, "feel that your attitude is disrespectful and rebellious, none of us can deny that your actions uncovered a problem and a conspiracy we ourselves had overlooked. And for that, we owe you our gratitude. We can't, however, simply ignore the fact that laws were broken."
She sucked in a breath, preparing for the worst as the whispers and murmurs buzzed in her ears like static.
"There was much debate on what proper punishment would be," Emery continued, with another sidelong glance at Bronte. "But a decision has been reached, and it is unanimous."
He cleared his throat.
"Considering the fact that we, as your rulers, failed to protect you from recent unfortunate experiences, we feel that it would be inappropriate to assign any further punishment. Your transgressions will go on your permanent record, but your punishment will be marked as already served, and that will be the end of the matter. Is that understood?"
It took a second for the words to sink in, and another after that for her racing mind to realize he expected a response. "Yes," Sophie practically sang, as the murmurs turned into chatter around her. Punishment already served. Could that really be it? Could it really be over?
"Which brings us to the matter of your foxfire admission,"
Emery shouted over the din, his words like a giant pin bursting the bubble she'd been floating in. The room fell silent, Sophie's heart thundered in her chest.
Miss Foster, you were admitted to Foxfire on a provisional basis, and the matter was to be revisited once we'd seen your performance in your sessions. Due, however, to the aforementioned unfortunate experiences, you missed all of your final exams and are currently failing all of your sessions. And in order to preserve the integrity of our testing process, we cannot allow the exams to be made up at this time. So we're at a bit of a loss as far as how to proceed.
Bronte opened his mouth, and Emery cut him off.
Your suggestion has been noted, Counselor Bronte. We are, however, hoping to hear a few other suggestions before we decide. I open this up to Miss Foster's mentors. Can any of you see a solution to her grade issues?
Whispers hissed through the auditorium as all of her mentors rose from their front row seats and bowed their respect.
If I may offer a suggestion,
Tiergan said, smoothing his intricate blue cape as he stood and bowed. He dressed up for the occasion. It looked fancier than Lady Galvin's.
Ah, Sir Tiergan,
Emery said, his voice with a harder edge.
It's been a long time since you've stood before us. Yes, and I hope this time my appeal will be more successful, he murmured.
Emery waved his hand, signaling that the floor was his. Tiergan shuffled his feet.
Sophie is the most talented telepath I've ever worked with, and I cannot imagine failing her for any reason. If you need proof that her skills hold up under test, well, I can't think of any better proof than the fact that she managed to transmit halfway across the world to Fitz and send a mental image to guide him to her location, all while her body was fading away. For that alone, I'd give her 100%. If the council would accept it.
Sophie resisted the urge to run across the room and hug him. There was a moment of silence before Emery nodded.
We would. But if she were to continue her studies at Foxfire, she would require a mentor. And our records indicate you aren't planning to return.
I would be willing to extend my stay as mentor, provided Sophie could remain as my prodigy,
Tiergan agreed, looking only at Sophie. She nodded, hoping he knew she appreciated his sacrifice. She knew how much he despised being part of the nobility.
Excellent, Emery turned to the other mentors. Anyone else have anything to add?
Lady Onwin stepped forward.
Sophie knows more about the human species than any prodigy I've had, so I'll gladly give her 100% in multispecial studies. She was already passing with flying colors.
Several of the counselors nodded their agreement. Bronte scowled.
The fact that she was able to pull herself back from fading away settles the mind over matter debate quite nicely,
Sir Faxon added,
and should definitely count for 100% in metaphysics.
He bowed and stepped aside to let Lady Dara forward. She dipped in an elaborate curtsy.
Sophie didn't just learn history. She made history. Textbooks will be written about her someday, and I'll not have them saying she received anything less than 100% in my session.
Hope flared in Sophie's heart, but she tried to squash it. She still had her toughest mentors left. She held her breath as Lady Alexine stepped forward.
I think the fact that Miss Foster was able to leap an injured friend without a nexus, and both of them survived to tell the tale, is more than enough to earn her 100% on her physical education exam.
And she found an unmapped star, Sir Aston added. Not to mention, she has the stars memorized. She definitely deserves 100% in the universe.
All the counselors were smiling at this point, except Bronte. He turned his murderous glare on Sir Conley as he bowed and cleared his throat.
Sophie successfully bottled a sample of Everblaze, something I doubt even I could have done. It would be absurd to give her anything less than 100% in elementalism.
The room seemed to hold its breath as all eyes turned to Lady Galvin. She stood behind the others, fingering the jewels on her dark purple cape.
Anything you would like to add?
Emery asked, when she didn't say anything. Lady Galvin cleared her throat.
This will not be a popular decision, but Miss Foster barely passed her midterm and has struggled with my session all year. There's no way I can justifiably pass her.
Silence throbbed through the room as Emery frowned.
Nothing will change your mind.
She turned to Sophie as she shook her head.
I'm sorry.
She sounded like she meant it. The crowd buzzed with murmurs of displeasure, but Sophie could hear Stina's cackle rise above it all. Right then, she would have given anything to be a vanisher and disappear.
That is most unfortunate, Emery said through a sigh.
He glanced at the other counselors, who were shaking their heads, except Bronte, who was smirking like a spider with a trapped fly.
It appears our hands are tied. We cannot allow Miss Foster to advance if she does not qualify for 8 subjects. Perhaps we can agree to let her retake the year.
He turned to the other counselors. The room swam around her and Sophie wobbled on her feet. Being held back was better than exilium, for sure, but it would still mean being left behind by all her friends.
If I may propose an alternative solution,
Alden interrupted, rising with an elegant bow. Sophie held her breath as Emery gestured for him to proceed.
The rule states that she must qualify for 8 sessions to advance, not that she must pass 8 sessions. And recent events have revealed that Sophie has developed a second special ability.
Alden paused for the murmurs in the crowd to quiet.
Obviously, that would qualify her for a session training her in her new ability. Therefore, it would seem not only practical, but prudent, to replace her alchemy session, which she obviously has no future career prospects in.
He flashed Sophie a smile.
With a session studying, inflicting.
The rumble of the audience shifting in their seats mirrored Sophie's internal unease. She had mixed feelings about being able to inflict pain on others at will, and she wasn't sure she wanted to train in it. But if it got her into the next level at Foxfire, it would be worth it. Emery stroked his chin.
That would be logical. Absolutely not,
Bronte barked, a vein throbbing in his forehead.
I refuse. That's not your decision to make,
Emery informed him with a smile.
An ability as volatile as inflicting qualifies for a majority vote decision. And,
he closed his eyes.
We have it. 11-1 in favor. That settles it. Miss Foster will continue her studies at Foxfire, and an inflicting session will replace her alchemy session.
Someone cheered. Dex or Keith, Sophie wasn't sure. And the whole audience followed their lead, erupting into applause and chanting her name. So,
I passed? Sophie asked Alden, shouting over the chaos. I can stay? She wanted to smile when he nodded, but the glare Bronte was directing at her was so hateful, it nearly knocked her over. He cleared his throat, silencing the room.
You can force me to mentor her in my ability, but her final grade will be up to me, and I can guarantee she will not pass.
Angry murmurs rose as Sophie turned to Alden. Bronte's going to be my mentor? She waited for him to tell her it was a mistake, but Alden nodded.
Bronte's the only registered inflictor, besides you. It's a very rare ability.
Her mind reeled with horror. Bronte made Lady Galvin seem cuddly. But he's planning to fail me.
We'll deal with that when the time comes. For now, just be glad you've earned another year at Foxfire.
She knew he was right, but it was hard to be excited about a year of one-on-one sessions with Bronte, learning how to inflict pain. She didn't even want to imagine how he'd teach something like that. Next year was going to be very interesting.
There's one more matter we must address before we close, Emery announced,
calling the room back to order.
It's a delicate matter, however, and one I think best left only to immediate friends and family. Everyone else, please see yourselves out.
He waited until the crowd left, then turned to Sophie.
It appears we have two adoption requests for you, Miss Foster. One, from Alden and Della Vacker. And the other, from Grady and Adeline Ruwen. The council feels it should be your choice, so we're leaving the decision up to you.
Sophie spun around, her eyes finding Grady and Adeline. Grady gave her a small smile.
It's your call, Sophie. Whatever you decide, we'll still love you.
Adeline nodded her agreement. Her eyes looked misty. Alden squeezed Sophie's hand and she jumped. She'd forgotten he was still next to her.
Della and I want you to be happy. Wherever you decide to live won't change anything.
Sophie nodded and swallowed the tangle of emotions trying to sort them out. She turned back to Grady and Adeline, taking in Adeline's tear-stained cheeks and dark circles, and Grady's puffy eyes and rigid jaw. She knew what she needed to do, what she wanted to do.
Do you need some time to decide?
Emery asked her. No, I've made up my mind. She took a deep breath and cleared the emotion out of her voice as she turned to face the council. I want to stay with Grady and Adeline Ruwen. She wasn't sure who cheered louder, Grady and Adeline, or Dex. Then she dipped another curtsy as Emery concluded the tribunal, and the counselors glittered away. Alden wrapped Sophie up in a big bear hug.
I'm so proud of you, he whispered. And I think you made the right decision.
I think so too, she said, glad he understood. Living with Alden and Della would have been awesome, but Grady and Adeline needed her, and she needed them too. She could never be Jolie, and they could never be the mom and dad she'd lost, but they could still be there for each other. Alden led her outside, where all her friends had gathered under one of the pures. Grady lifted her, twirling her twice before setting her down so Adeline could strangle her with a hug.
You won't regret that decision,
Adeline whispered, kissing her cheek.
I promise.
I know I won't, Sophie whispered back. I love you guys.
We love you too.
Grady crushed her with a hug, and when he pulled away, his eyes were wet with tears. Sophie scrubbed her own tears away with the back of her hand.
For the record, I'm really glad they didn't exile you,
Dex said, as he gave her an awkward hug.
And I'm really glad you aren't going to be a Vacker,
he whispered in her ear. Sophie rolled her eyes, but her lips still twisted into a smile. Some things never change, and she wasn't sure that was a bad thing.
So, you don't want to live with us?
Fitz teased, nudging her arm.
I see how it is.
I know,
Keefe agreed.
You save a girl's life one day, and the next day she trades you away like a prattle's pin.
Bianna shoved her way between them. She probably couldn't stand the thought of having you guys around all the time, and I can't say I blame her. Sophie giggled.
You guys don't mind?
Nah. One little sister is more than I can handle already,
Fitz said, as he sidestepped Bianna's shove.
I guess I'll have to settle for being your friend.
Friends sounds good, Sophie agreed. Her heart fluttered when their eyes connected, and she backed a step away before Keefe noticed the change in her mood.
Friend was way better than little sister.
You still staying with us tonight? Bianna asked. Actually, I think I want to sleep in my room, if that's okay. She glanced at Grady and Edeline. They smiled and nodded. Della pulled Sophie in for a hug.
Just make sure you visit us sometimes.
I will.
You'd better.
Oh, and we got you something. Della handed Sophie a small teal box.
To congratulate you for surviving another tribunal.
Keefe snorted.
Leave it to Foster to face multiple tribunals in 9 months.
Sophie ignored him as she pulled a black nexus from the box. It was almost identical to the one the kidnapper stole from her, except it had tiny swirls of diamonds set into the sides instead of the runes. Thank you, she said, fingering the glittering teal jewel in the center.
I know you liked your other one, so I tried to find one close to that. But a little bit more feminine. I hope it's okay, Della said.
It's perfect.
Your concentration is strong enough to not need one, but Elwyn doesn't want you leaping alone until you've given your body some time to recover,
Alden explained as he locked the nexus on her wrist.
This one will only unlatch when Elwyn decides you're ready and uses a special key. And these just came from the registry.
He handed her and Dex new registry pendants. They were fancier than their old pendants. Small copper beads framed each side of the crystal, which was now a triangle with three facets on each side. And extra cords had been woven into the chain, making it triply thick.
Added security measures, Alden explained,
as Adeline swept Sophie's hair back and clasped the choker snug around her neck. Sophie squeezed the pendant, feeling more like herself again. She would always be slightly different, but in her own way, she finally belonged. And with the extra protection, she could almost let go of her worries about the kidnappers. Almost. She reached for Grady's and Edeline's hands, feeling safer with someone to hold on to. Not just someone. Her family.
You ready to go?
Edeline asked, squeezing her hand tighter.
Yeah, I think I am.
She took another look at the smiling faces of all her friends. They were safe. She was safe. Everything was going to be okay. Grady tightened his grip on her hand as he held the Pathfinder up to the light.
Well, come on then. Let's go home.
She nodded, letting his words sink into her heart. They stepped into the path, and a comforting warmth that had nothing to do with the rushing light overwhelmed Sophie. It had been a long and difficult journey, but she finally knew where she belonged. Sophie Foster was going home.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Keeper of the Lost Cities.
Written by Shannon Messenger. Performed by Caitlin Kelly. Executive producers Ryan McGavin and Mike Charzik. Producer Neil Basic. Copyright 2012 by Shannon Messenger. Sound recording copyright 2018 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc. If you enjoyed this audiobook, be sure to get more books in the Keepers of the Lost Cities series today.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.